KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from San Leandro.
I'm living in Richmond.
Vallejo.
San Jose.
Oakland.
In the bottom of 12th Street.
Coming up, we'll look at what San Francisco's new mayor means for the city.
London Breed has great potential to do a lot of the things that she wants to do, and the ball's in her court.
A local media roundtable with reporters from Mission Local and Mother Jones. Then we'll hear your thoughts on what we should do to improve the news media from our project California Speaks.
Cease using only college graduates from journalism schools and start using people that have no college degrees.
And we'll hear the sounds of San Francisco's street musicians.
I'm not trying to get rich. I just want to survive. Right now I'm homeless. I'm not going to stay on the corner. Can you spare some change?
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is coming up. London Breed took over the top office in San Francisco just over a month ago, the same election that made her mayor put a majority of political progressives on the Board of Supervisors. What does this all mean for the city and county, and how does it fit into the larger narrative about race, class, and politics? KALW's news director, Ben Trefney, convened a local media roundtable to talk about all that. He joined Jamila King, the race and justice reporter for Mother Jones, and Mission Local's managing editor, Joe Eskenazi.
All right. So, Jamila, what do you think it means for London Breed to be the mayor of San Francisco right now?
So I think right now, London Breed becoming mayor represents the sort of coming together of some of the most intense fault lines in San Francisco politics. I think there are two things at play. I think one, you know, San Francisco can and does have this legacy of politically disenfranchising Black leaders and the communities that they represent. And on the other hand, you know, there's this very real fact that power in San Francisco has always trended toward more conservative interests. So you have this sort of native, you know, locally grown and produced product in London Breed now representing these conservative interests. And that's a really tangled web to try and unweave in this particular political moment.
Now, you said disenfranchising Black political leadership, but at the same time, Willie Brown, of course, has been a very powerful figure politically in San Francisco. So do you count him amongst that, or what do you mean exactly?
I do. So I think that, you know, Willie Brown became the first Black mayor of San Francisco in 1996. And I think that's something that is very true for, you know, if you talk to Black organizers in the city, is that Black politicians are sort of, or Black constituencies are only as powerful as the politicians who listen to them. And so, you know, when he had a, Willie Brown had a very contested mayorship that, you know, folks, a lot of more progressive, radical-minded folks in San Francisco who work with Black communities say was devastating for a lot of Black communities. A lot of the housing policies that were administered under the Brown administration were pretty awful for Black communities. That said, I think that, you know, some of the folks that I've talked to have said that, you know, when you have these really symbolic moments and you have these figureheads of whether it's a London Breed or a Willie Brown, you know, they are working on behalf of the loudest interests. And their sort of, you know, pivot is to try and make sure or try to build this Black constituency of working class folks, of, you know, just folks in the city, in the Bayview, in the Fillmore, other places in San Francisco, who can sort of advocate and be the loudest voices in the room. The trouble with that, of course, is that Black folks right now in San Francisco are among the most disenfranchised communities in San Francisco. You know, Black San Franciscans have been declining for the past, you know, 30 to 40 years. But when you look at the numbers...
Yeah, less than 5% now.
Right, less than 5%. And I think that, you know, also when you look at the folks who are left, you have, you know, this discrepancy. You have a lot of very, very disenfranchised, working class, poor Black folks. And then you have, you know, sort of this newer breed, so to speak, of Black folks who are coming into the city and working for tech interests and are a little bit more economically mobile. So the fact that you're not really able to have a middle, I think, really makes it hard to organize a collective Black base that can actually advocate for Black interests. A lot of the folks that I've talked to who've grown up in the city, who are familiar with London Breed, are kind of holding these two diametrically opposed feelings at once. One, they're super proud that this girl from the Fillmore has now become the most powerful person, you know, at least, you know, ostensibly speaking in San Francisco. And on the other hand, they don't really expect her to have the power to institute long-term systemic change. And I think that latter part of that equation has to do with the politics of San Francisco, of being Black in San Francisco for the last 50 to 60 years.
As you were talking about, Jamila, London Breed is considered to be more on the moderate side, maybe the more conservative interests in the city. How do you see, Joe, the makeup of the Board of Supervisors affecting this and her interactions with them and her history with them?
There are some interesting issues coming out that aren't cleaving on progressive and moderate lines. It was Supervisor Raphael Mandelman, who is a progressive, that went with London Breed to Sacramento to argue about conservatorships and changing the way that they're done. And so certainly this is something that London Breed and Scott Wiener, State Senator Scott Wiener, made an issue of during the election, is altering the way that that homeless people who cannot take care of themselves are overseen by the government. And with Raphael Mandelman, whose own mother had this happen at his behest, certainly, you know, this shows that it may not have to be a straight-up progressive versus moderate issue. That said, you know, I don't think that we're in a post-political spot in San Francisco at all. I think while London Breed did win the mayor's race, a lot of the issues that came out are popular are quote-unquote progressive issues.
Well, I'm curious then also, Jamila, in writing about London Breed and researching her, do you think, you know, I have questions as she ran for mayor and all the other candidates ran for mayor and everybody came down with pretty aggressive lines on homeless issues. I believe that London Breed said that she wanted to essentially eradicate it by 2020, which is, you know, pretty much not going to happen probably, but maybe she's going to take some pretty strong measures to do that. What do you anticipate, knowing her background politically, of the direction that she's going to take on those issues and other ones you think are most significant for the city?
You know, frankly, she knows that San Francisco is under a microscope, that folks are looking to San Francisco nationally, looking at, you know, how we're going to address such drastic income disparities, how we're going to address homelessness, how we're going to address mental illness. I think it's, you know, time will tell, but I think that she recognizes that the pressure is on and that a lot of folks are watching.
I have a question too, Jamila. Since you look nationally at issues of race and justice, really the Bay Area is pretty void of Black leadership in a lot of ways at a lot of different levels of government, whether it's state leadership or national, with the obviously very clear exceptions of Kamala Harris and Barbara Lee as well. And yet San Francisco, which has such a small population of African Americans, is being led politically by two Black women, by the mayor, London Breed, and then by the president of the Board of Supervisors, Malia Cohen. What do you think that says, if anything, about race in politics in San Francisco?
I think we're at a really interesting political moment where we're seeing identity matter probably more than it's ever mattered outright in political life. I think that, you know, you look around the country at folks like Stacey Abrams, who's running for governor of Georgia. You look at folks like Tish James, who's running for attorney general of New York. Of course, those are state level offices. But I think it's, you know, also true that folks are voting based off of their experience, voting because of experiences that they can relate to, and voting sort of aspirationally, right? Like, I think there was a lot of talk around this in 2008 and 2012 around Obama, is that folks who maybe couldn't relate to his experience were voting because they were moved by his experience or because they aspirationally thought that this represented the America that we want to see. I think there's a gap between the America that we want to see and the America that we're actually willing to put our values on the line for and create. And, you know, I was just profiling a candidate who's running for State Assembly in New York named Catalina Cruz. She's a formerly undocumented immigrant, moved to New York from Colombia when she was 9 years old, and is very much leaning into talking about her personal narrative, talking about her past as being undocumented in ways that she didn't anticipate doing when she was, you know, first talking about or thinking about running for office. And so I think that people see that, you know, there are a lot of communities under attack right now. And folks want to ally themselves with those communities, and folks want to talk directly to their experiences because they recognize that the stakes are really high. And, you know, nationally and, you know, in terms of state government and locally, a lot of communities feel like they're at risk. And so there's this fear, but there's also this hope that's driving people to do things and vote for folks that they may not have voted for before.
And Jamila, do you have any final thoughts that you want to share about city politics in San Francisco right now?
Yeah, so I think one important thing that is worth noting is that as much as we talk about London Breed as a Black politician, she's also a woman, right? And I think that this is a moment where being a woman in politics after the defeat of Hillary Clinton in the era of Donald Trump means a lot more than it did, you know, before November of 2016. And so, you know, that means that a lot of folks are watching, but it also means that, you know, folks do relate to London Breed, and specifically women voters, female voters, folks who know and love women in their families, folks who are really, you know, disgusted at what they see every day in the news. That means that they're going to, you know, vote for an identity that they can relate to, even if it's not London Breed as a Black woman or as a Black person, but also as a woman. So, you know, I think identity politics are something that we're going to see play out a lot more for the rest of the year, for the rest of 2018. It's also something that I think you're going to see heading into the presidential election of 2020. And I think when we talk about identity politics, it's also important to recognize that white identity politics are very much at the center of that, too.
Joe, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I do. I think anyone who underestimates London Breed's intelligence or savvy is walking into a minefield. I think London Breed, like I said at the outset of this, the question is, will she make San Francisco feel better about itself and make San Francisco look better in a superficial way or in a real meaningful way or a little bit of both? She is deploying 6 steam cleaners we already had to clean up poop, which is what they were already doing. And that was a front page story. So that's great public relations. You know, I think that there's been a great deal of effort in focusing an almost monomaniacal effort and monomaniacal press coverage of filth on the streets. And I'm using filth as a euphemism for something else. But that's something that people get hung up about. And if she can make people's impressions of the streets different, that's great. London Breed has also substantively opened up permanent navigation centers as opposed to the temporary ones that Ed Lee was opening up. So that's something that could be a little bit more real. And again, I'm waiting to see, you know, I think that you have to make people feel different about San Francisco than they do because of the uncomfortable feelings of sorrow and misery and filth on the streets. And it remains to be seen just what we do about that. On the other hand, you know, if one of her competitors had won, I would imagine that there'd be wholesale change. That isn't the message that we get from London Breed, who was not instructed by the voters to be a bull in the china shop.
That's Joe Eskenazi, managing editor of Mission Local, and Jamila King, race and justice reporter for Mother Jones. They spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. That conversation was produced by KALW's Sarah Harrison. Mayor London Breed yesterday sent a blistering letter to Muni officials chastising the agency for insufficiently vetting construction contractors, for delays, and for poor communication with riders. The mayor has got some power here. She chooses who is on the SFMTA board of directors. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Last Wednesday, media outlets across the country came together in solidarity, speaking about the importance of a free press. The next day, the U.S. Senate unanimously declared, quote, "the press is not the enemy of the people," in a roll call vote. This is in response, of course, to President Trump's statement that media is the enemy of the American people. Well, we don't agree, of course, but we do like to think about ways journalists can do their jobs better. So our multi-station project, California Speaks, asked, what should we do to improve the news media? Let's hear some of what you had to say.
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm in Redding, California. And my suggestion for improving at least the printed news is cease using only college graduates from journalism schools and start using people that have no college degrees, because only about 25% of people actually graduate from college. And so when you have only people from college doing your news, That's the only perspective you get, unlike the system that they use in Great Britain, which is an apprenticeship type system where you learn the trade as you work in it.
My name is Nancy Chang. I'm calling from La Crescenta, California. To improve the news media, we should bring back the FCC rule that used to be in place, requiring some kind of journalistic integrity, and also any kind of media organization that's not registered as a news organization should not be allowed to name itself as the word news in its name. So Fox News is an entertainment organization. It should be required to be call itself only Fox Entertainment or take out the word news.
Scott, Oakland, California. More investigative journalism is my opinion. I really value what I learned because of the Pentagon Papers and Knight Ridder's efforts in revealing WMDs in Iraq and the lie that it was.
My name is Rob. I'm from Los Altos Hills. I think that we could improve the news media by working along with the folks at Civil. They are working on a way to use the blockchain in order to help ensure high quality, high integrity journalism and potentially crowdfunding a way to impose good governance and good news over news efforts. A really good podcast that explains what Civil is doing is the Zigzag podcast being put out by Stable Genius Productions. I would highly recommend it, but it would be a great way to help ensure that newsrooms have a vested interest in reporting high-quality, real news about subjects that are important for an informed populace.
Ralph, San Francisco. It would take a little leadership, but I wish the press corps could be united enough such that at a press conference with the president or his spokesperson confronted with something that is so obviously wrong or untrue, such as the fact that you need a photo ID to buy groceries, they would all get up and walk out. That would be really powerful, a very powerful statement. It may be extreme, but what the hell? I had to do this. Thank you very much for being there. And the question is a dandy.
Those voices were gathered as part of the media collective project California Speaks. There's a new question, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on it. It has to do with how much people are paid. The state minimum wage is $10.50, or $11 an hour, depending on a business's number of employees. Here in San Francisco, it's highest in the nation at $15 an hour. So, is that enough to live on? This week's California Speaks question is, what do you think is an actual living wage in your county? You can share your thoughts. Call 1-833-773-2522. That's 1-833-SPEAK-CA. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. If you live or work in one of the Bay Area's urban centers, your soundscape includes cars, buses, trains, and street musicians. Lance Gardner spent some time talking to a number of the city's buskers last year and produced a series of stories like this one.
I'm not going to stop playing these drums. This is what I live for. I got a degree as a cook, but I hate cooking. I'm not trying to get rich, I just want to survive. Right now, I'm homeless. I'm not going to stay on the corner. Can you spare some change? I ain't going to do that. I got talent, and I'm going to get gigs out of this. Just came back from Germany, and I got into movies and TV commercials and traveled overseas representing the city, and been in movies with Will Smith, Pursuit of Happiness. I've been in Intel commercial. My name is Larry Hunt, the Bucket Man of San Francisco. I'm from Kansas, man. I'm a founder of Yellow Brick Road. Success. I'm my own boss. I'll be out here for about an hour, hour and a half. If I make enough to get by, I'm cool. But right now, since this is going on, I'm going to get, what, $2 in my tip jar. Wherever these goes, I go. Can't take these drones into the shelters, and I have $80 a night staying in a hotel room. That's how bad it is. If I don't make $80, I got to see my doors. And then sometimes I stay in my lady friend's house only for 8 days, which that's up. So I'm back on the streets. I got my own spot. I've been up in this area for 22, 23 years now. Went to go eat. I had a friend watching my stuff for me. And they threatened him, told him, if he don't leave, he going to jail. And they took his stuff as much as took mine. I had a laptop. My laptop, my tent, I was sleeping outdoors just to get on my feet, and I went out to go get it the same day they took it. Oh, we ain't got it. A 3,000 drone said, you ain't got it, you just left to get it. And everybody told me you took it, so it's not fair. Intel brought that for me. A $3,000 set of Intel drum set, DWs. They tell them about, we don't know where it is. You know where that set is, they know. My friend, one of the guys had a drum, bass drum in his house, and gave me his bass drum, and I just scrapped up piece by piece. This is all I got left. They take this from me, I'll die, but I'm not gonna die, because I'm not gonna let them stop me. I'll play my buckets. You know, this is what I like doing. I entertain, keep people doing something. Would you rather see me go out here and rob somebody or beat somebody to take this stuff? People walk down the street, you just look at some of these people's faces. Some are miserable or they got something on their mind, but a little beat and a happy smile and a little song I see make them change the whole outlook about life. And that's what I do. I entertain them. Don't let nobody stop what you do in your dreams. You can do it if you put your mind to it. Because I'm doing it for 23 years on this street, playing my drums and my buckets. I got in movies, TV commercials, traveled to Germany, and it's in yourself. You want to do it, you can do it.
That story about a busker named Larry was produced by Lance Gardner. Well, we've got time for one more.
When I came out here, I could breathe better. Now I've been out here for 2 years now. A little over two years. So yeah, man, I love it, but it's expensive. I'm out here playing on the streets. I'm a street musician. Landed me a studio apartment here, which I've been waiting for 2 years to get. Now I'm in the heart of the city. I'm on Turk and Van Ness. So yeah, it's a blessing. Now, like I said, I know a female guitar player. She makes about $70 an hour, but she's pretty. You know, she looks like, she looks like Jennifer Lopez. Now, you know what I asked the woman? I said, if I look like a woman, would that make me a better looking man? Well, I used to play in bands, but it was a big headache. But now I play, so I'm a independent. I'm a gun for hire because the bands, man, it's the headache. The drummer might not show for practice, and you know I can depend on myself. I get paid for practicing. What I really love about is the police don't. They actually encourage you to play. I mean, where I come from, they'll lock you up real quick. Nothing like Detroit. Nothing like Detroit. But I love it, man. And like I said, the people are nice. I taught myself in the beginning, but I ended up going to school later. When I graduated high school, I went to the University of Cincinnati. That was like in the 80s, because I started in 75. I was like 13, 14 years old. I wanted my mother to buy me a guitar, but she wouldn't get me a guitar because she thought I would just tear it up. And I borrowed a guitar from a friend down the street. A week later, I'm playing songs off the radio after just touching the guitar. They was like, okay, I guess you can do something. My auntie was like, wow, he got a gift. So that came from God. That's all I can say. I've been playing almost 40 years now. So, but I'm pretty good at it.
Cordell's story was produced by Lance Gardner. And Lance is part of the incoming Audio Academy class here at KELW, which starts up in a couple of weeks. If you're interested in learning how to tell stories from around the Bay Area, send us a note at news@kalw.org. And don't forget, subscribe to our podcast at kalw.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Nina Gensler-Debs, Mary Franklin Harvin, Sarah Coast, Kristen McCandless, Lisa Morehouse, Drew Quinn, Priscilla Wilson, and Eli Wirtschafter. Gabe Graben, Tarek Foda, and James Rollins engineer the show. Shirina Adil is our content manager. Jen Sheehan is our managing editor. Our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Cindy from San Francisco. They'll be playing at the Hemlock this Thursday night. Show starts at 8:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanout Baba.
And she screamed in the phone when the DJ said her name. She hoped somehow that wherever he is, by chance he would be there.